everyone, and welcome to the 10th series of Shade Podcasts, which will explore artist stories from concept to community. And my guest today is Ibrahim Mahama, an installation artist who works with textiles, material production and found objects to create large-scale public interventions. He initially garnered widespread attention for his open-air installations made of stitched-together jute sacks that were draped on or over architectural structures, such as libraries, an airport and a museum, in the cities of Accra and Kumasi, where he is based. His practice involves a collaborative process of sourcing, collecting, reproducing and installing the often textile-based materials he works with. His pieces speak to ideas around historical memories, traditional belief systems, local economies and the democratization of art. Ibrahim's works have been shown in various group and solo shows, including the Norval Foundation in Cape Town, the White Cube in London and Hong Kong, and has been part of the Ghana Pavilion for the 2019 Venice Biennale, among many others. In this episode, I'll be chatting to Ibrahim about his upcoming large-scale public commission opening at the Barbican this spring, the process behind creating this work and his hopes for its reception. Okay, let's dive in, and I hope you enjoy. Ibrahim, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I'm so excited to meet with you today. I'd love to begin by asking you about your upcoming artwork, your public commission for the Barbican that's going to be exhibited on the Lakeside Terrace, and it's entitled Purple Hibiscus. And I understand that it's absolutely huge and it's going to be made up of pink and purple fabric that's been woven and sewn by hand in collaboration of hundreds of craft workers from Tamale in Ghana. And I'm interested how everything that you've done before this point has led you to create this particular piece in the way that you have for this particular location. Could we just hear about this process?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I guess I came to London for the first time in 2013. At the time, I had been invited to do a residency, which I had been recommended by some curators from the Tate. And then I had a show at the Saatchi Gallery and part of a group show, Pangaea, which I, at the time, I was working with these jute sacks, which I was sourcing from market spaces in Ghana. Of course, I was working with collaborators in those spaces. And I was always very much interested in the history of labor conditions in objects, inherent within objects, not just in relation to the body. And also like the relationship between the body and then these objects that I find. So I went on for a while to do various installations in Ghana. Those independent projects, of course, were very important to me as an artist in terms of what it meant for the local art scene. And subsequently also, I did a couple of installations in Venice in the Biennial, in Documenta, in Germany, Kassel, and in Athens, and then also in a couple of other institutions, both in the US and then also here in Europe. And I guess in 2020, during the pandemic, I had been invited by an institution in Portugal, Guimarães, the Contextile Biennial, to respond to the textile history in this city, Guimarães. That's when I actually started working with these materials on a large scale. I started collecting these predominantly these materials that I use for purple hibiscus in 2012, the same time when I was collecting the jute sacks, because I was interested in the condition of the body. So interested in materials that have been used for transporting commodities, but also interested in the history of the body as a commodity in itself because of the research I do around my work. So I experimented with it and then did a project and then subsequently showed another piece at the Sharjah Biennial. But when I was invited to respond to the Barbican, that's when I started thinking about this material and thinking, okay, for the first time, maybe I could actually do a facade wrap with it. And the color, purple hibiscus, of course, on the first level was inspired by looking at the title of Chimamanda's book, Purple Hibiscus. Because in all my work, it's always been very gray, like subdued colors and things like that. And I thought, okay, why not really experiment and play and then try something new for the first time? So it started off as a joke, actually. And then it actually became a work in itself, yeah.
That's so interesting. So, yeah, you've mentioned that the title of your work borrows its name from Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's 2003 novel, Purple Hibiscus, which tells the story of two teenagers growing up in Nigeria amidst the backdrop of the military coup. But is there, like, the relationship between your work and her work, does the connection go beyond, like, the colour? Like, why did you go for that title?
You know, Chimamanda is such an amazing writer. Her work has always been in relation to, like, history, like the order of history and other things. In my work also, history has always been quite important in terms of why things look the way they do. And I've always been interested in the idea of the multiple truths within, let's say, an object and the perspectives that they can offer us. In the 60s, Ghana went through a turmoil where there was a military coup which ousted our first president, Kwame Nkrumah. Of course, Nigeria, together with some of the countries within the sub-region, had similar histories and all that. In our generation, we always say that somehow our future has always been somehow trapped in the past. Because in the 50s, and in the late 50s, when Ghana attained independence, of course, Nigeria attained independence in the 1960. And then so if you're looking at, let's say, between 1957 to like the late 60s and all that, there was quite a lot of promise in terms of what the new promise of like this post-independent countries could be. And then there was this kind of steep decline and all that. And when I was invited to look at the Barbican, you know, because it's a very brutalist building, like hardcore concrete, built with a lot of manual labor, things like that. I was really thinking about, let's say, what it means, for instance, to use a material which is soft, like a textile material like this, something which is going to be woven by hand, paying attention to the labor qualities, because I work with over 1,000 people, both women and men, in order to be able to stitch everything by hand to produce this, and also to negotiate to get all these materials. So I thought it might be just interesting to somehow use this title, Purple Hibiscus, focusing on both the history of the order of the book and also looking at the history of the material. And then somehow, for me, somehow like a beautiful tragedy in a way. On one hand, you look at the building and it's very hardcore brutalist, but at the same time, when you find the material on it blowing against the building, blowing against the wind and all that, it's also extremely beautiful. It's one of those things where you read a book which ends up in tragedy, but at the same time, it's so well written and it's so beautiful that it keeps you thinking about it again and again.
Absolutely fantastic. It's just like so many personal connections for me there as well. It's, you know, I spent my childhood at the Barbican. My auntie was actually one of the first residents to move into the Barbican. So I grew up there and it was my first exposure to art, as you were. I used to look over the balconies and watch all the people go to the exhibitions and the concerts and just thought it was just very romantic and amazing. So, and here we are talking about your artwork today. It's so beautiful. I can't wait to see it. But as you talk about this particular artwork here, you know, as with all of your works, they are grounded in political histories, and your work is also rooted in making art accessible to the public. I'm very curious about the personal considerations that run alongside this. You know, as an artist myself, I understand that quite often there are personal excavations and developments and explorations that go alongside the work that we're creating. So I'm just really curious about how you have been impacted personally, how you've developed whilst working on Purple Hibiscus.
It's been quite immense, actually. We started talking about producing this work very early last year. And then we started the actual commission middle of the year. And it took at least 6 months to be able to produce the work. But within that period, we had to commission. I have an uncle in Ghana. His name is Mohamed Issa. He's very industrious. Like, he's always helping me with like all the projects that I do, either collecting airplanes or trains or things like that. And he was the one who had to go around and commission the production of all these cloths, because I had to design the fabric to begin with. So once I got the color and the design right by working with these textile makers, once we got it right, then we had to distribute the fabric across different weavers across the city. And then they had to like produce. And it was quite extensive in terms of what the production meant. And eventually we had to get like different people, both working in fashion and also who could help us recruit the SOWES, that's the collaborators that we're working with, both people who are working in the garment industry and also people who are learning, who are apprentices who are learning to be like garment makers and things like that. So it somehow connected us to a lot of people. For me, one of the most important things has always been about the human relations and connections when you're producing any work. The sensibilities within the work are distributed. So for instance, I'm very excited about the work like unveiling on the Barbican. But for me, the most important thing was also this shared idea of producing this material on a large scale, either on a stadium, in a city, or in a park somewhere. For me, most often, that can also be the work in itself, the relationship between the people and the material. And it became very evident within this. So I started now thinking, oh, is it possible to then now organize large scale, like weaving or sewing within, let's say, certain public spaces or within the mosque or within spaces that somehow seem like they might be sacred, because most of the materials are collected, most often they are personal, very sacred things to people. They've been passed on from one generation to the other, so they wouldn't give it to you ordinarily. But the idea that people would allow us to be able to use it to produce something as culturally significant as this piece, it somehow really changed and improved the way I looked at my practice in terms of the relationship between the making of the work and then the audience.
And just lastly, with the opening so soon and with the scale of the work being such a big point of excitement for everybody anticipating their visit, what are your hopes for its legacy, the legacy of this particular project?
Well, it's quite exciting, honestly. For me, it's just exciting that 10 years ago when I was in London, exactly 10 years ago, 2014, I had a show, I was part of a group show at the Saatchi Gallery, and I came to the Barbican with a friend of mine, Osei Bonsu, who works at the Tate now, is a curator there. And we came to sit by the Lakeside Terrace, and we're just talking. We came to see a retrospective, actually, at the Barbican. And I never imagined that my work would be shown on the Barbican. Like,
yes, amazing.
You know? So, but also a lot of artists have always inspired the work that we've done, like very significant artists like Elana Chi, the Ghanaian artist who has the Turbine Hall Commission at the moment. And yeah, he has a show coming up in Scotland, actually, which I also have a show coming up. So our shows will coincide. And then his show is at the Turbine Hall is just ending this weekend, I think. And then the Barbican Commission opens on just early next week. So for some reason, I feel very proud and excited to be connected or to be doing work that somehow is in dialogue with his own life practice as an artist. But certainly because he's a true master, and his work has always inspired us in terms of looking at how fluid art practice or art itself can be. But certainly also I think that once this commission opens up, it will open up a whole new possibility for maybe what the Barbican themselves could do with these public commissions going forward, because this is the first of its kind in terms of the scale with the facade and everything. And I hope that it will go a long way also to inspire maybe artists, younger artists here who are in the art school and others to be a bit more courageous regarding the form and shape that their practices take. Because after all, if I could come from Ghana, from Tamale, which is quite remote and also it's a bit steeped in like economic difficulties and poverty, even if we're able to produce with this kind of crisis in order to be able to produce this level of work and detail, then I think that it's possible to do more things in other parts of the world, particularly here in the UK. I know that there are times could be quite difficult economically and all that, but certainly still, there is always a possibility for us to be able to take the circumstances in which we live in and then be able to transform it and do something with it.
So courage is the message here.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Purple Hibiscus opens at the Barbican on April the 10th. It's free, obviously, to the public, because you could just see this beautiful creation as you enter the terrace at the Barbican. So everybody listening, please go enjoy Ibrahim's work on April the 10th and beyond. Ibrahim, it was so great to hear more about the considerations and the influences that underpin your practice and where you see it going and what your hopes are for it in the future. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ibrahim as much as I did. Purple Hibiscus opens at the Barbican in London on April the 10th, 2024, and is free to the public. Everyone listening, please go enjoy Ibrahim's work at the Barbican on the Lakeside Terrace, which opens on the 10th of April and runs through to the 18th of August. Subscribe to Shade Podcast to listen to all the episodes in this series. Also explore Shade Art Review on Substack, joining thousands of art-curious listeners like you who are discovering more about the work of visual artists from the Black diaspora. There you'll find art listings, comment, artist spotlights and guest posts, and free subscriptions are available. But for the full Shade Art Review experience, sign up today to receive 20% off your annual membership, an offer which is available for the duration of this series. This series of Shade Podcasts was produced and hosted by me, Lou Mensah, and mixed by Tess Davidson. See you next time.